Hello again, everyone, and welcome to Mrs. Techie's Technology Classroom. I'm going to be talking to you today a little bit about teaching digital technology in the early years. So if you've got a foundation or prep or kindy class that you need to get started teaching digital technology, this episode is for you. I'm going to be talking about a few things that I've tried and tested that have worked to get that engagement happening and just to get kids into that world of understanding what digital technology is. I know in lots of schools the temptation is there to get started with the ICT skills, and yes, absolutely, that's a really good thing to do in that first year of school. But if we want them to be seriously able to access the digital curriculum going forward, there are also a few little things that need to be covered in terms of understanding. So the first thing that I will usually do in a classroom with kindy or prep age kids is to have them singing and chanting. If you have a little bit of a look around YouTube, I found that the BBC Kids part of YouTube is really good. You can find some little videos about kids and digital technology. I like some of those simple 1 or 2 minute videos that have a little cartoon that goes with it and a song that you can work with. It just gives them time to sit down and just sort of settle into the room, because we know that with prep students, the sitting is often the most challenging part of their day. So that's a good way to get started. I also have some little chants that we can do. You can have kids clapping and clicking and get them to repeat some chants about the basics of technology. So things like an algorithm is a set of instructions and those sorts of things. Get them to make them up with you as you go along. You can do some clapping and clicking, get those simple little sentences happening, and it really gets it stuck in their head. A little bit of rote learning, a little bit of old school with the new school technology curriculum. So that's a really good way to get started. The next thing I like to move on to is getting them familiar with that idea of coding. That coding can start top to bottom with cards, often in visual programming language, it does go top to bottom, and we can provide kids with some little cards to get them started. So that sounds like an awful lot, but simple things like Simon Says, you know, when I say Simon says, then you're going to follow the instruction. So that conditional, when this, then that, if this, then that. So we can start with things like, you know, when I ring the bell, take a step forward. When I ring the bell, sit down, and changing those cards in or out in front of the kids so that they can see. You could then move on to things like, when I ring the bell, take a step forward, then sit down. So you've got that progression of code there from one simple step to a few steps. You can then alternate your conditionals, have two sets of cards up at the front, two lines of code, you know, one that says, when I ring the bell, step forward, sit down. When I clap my hands, turn around and put your hands above your head, or something like that. So then kids are listening for those conditionals. If I've rung the bell or if I've clapped my hands, which set of instructions they're going to follow. And you can be fairly, you know, you can stand at the front and really run that activity, or you could hand out the cards to kids and say, okay, if your name starts with J, come on out the front, let's have a look at your cards. How can we put these in an order so the kids could follow them? What conditional would you like? How are we going to know when to start this line of code and those sorts of things? So really getting the kids up and into those activities is really important. They really love that. They really love that idea that they can sort of boss each other around. It's simple. You just need some cardboard and a marker. I tend to make sure that I might write the words on the cards, but really stick with some picture cues so that kids who aren't reading yet can still follow the cards, because there'll be a lot of them. A lot of them aren't even up to writing their names yet at this time of the year. So getting those sorts of activities happening is a really good way to use up your time in your digital technology lesson without wasting time and not having kids moving forward with the digital technology's content. Because we know that if you've got a half hour with these little people, that's often down to about 21, 22 minutes. By the time someone's asked a silly question or talked to you about their cat, by the time you've got them in the door, by the time you get them back out of the door, that half hour lesson really diminishes down very quickly, particularly in the early weeks. reading some books is a really good way to go too. And at the moment, there are lots and lots of books coming out from different publishing houses, teaching the concepts of computing and other technological aspects. I've been on the hunt for a set of perfect books, three books maybe, that I could recommend to others, and I haven't found them yet. I've just ordered another couple of books from America, so I'm hoping that by next time I can let you know some books that will really help you out there. There are a lot of books aimed at older students, but nothing really in that 4 to 5 market. I'm working on that with some friends who write children's books, but you know, it might be some time before we see that coming out. So reading some books would be a great idea, watching some videos, singing some songs, and then again, as I said, those sort of Simon Says activities leading to building up some more complex code is a really good way to get started. So that should fill in your first couple of weeks. From then on, I am moving on to BeeBots. Now, I love BeeBots. They're fantastic in your prep and one classrooms. They can be used in a whole variety of ways. And if you go back to one of my earlier podcasts, Robotics in the Junior Primary Classroom, you'll hear some more ideas about that. But for lots of you, you're starting out and you don't have BeeBots. You don't have access to them, or you might have one BeeBot, and that's very difficult to run a class with only one robot. So here's an alternative for you. Grab some 2 liter ice cream buckets, get some square stickers, put the markings on top of those ice cream buckets so it matches a BeeBot. There you have it, a BeeBot helmet. You can make one for every kid in your class, or they can make them themselves if you've got some bigger helpers to help them decorate. So offcuts of contact, which seem to be plentiful at this time of the year, or other stickers and stars and those sorts of things. Let the kids go to town and just decorate their BeeBot helmet and make it their very own. Then you can start doing some coding with these BeeBot helmets on a mat. Now, if you don't have BeeBot mats, that's perfectly fine. In fact, if you're using BeeBot helmets, you're probably going to want to make your own mats. I found the best way to make something that's hardy and lasts a long time is to go down to Bunnings or a hardware shop and grab a roll of shade cloth. So I got a roll that was about, 5 or 8 meters or something like that, cost me under $10, chopped it in half, 2 mats ready to go. And I just used plain old ordinary boring masking tape to mark out the squares on those, and they've been brilliant. They've lasted so well. One of them I had to reapply the masking tape after a term of pretty heavy use by some kids who like to pick at it, but the other one is perfect after a whole year of use with small people and 7 or 8 classes using that over the week. So that's a really cheap way to get yourself some mats happening. I tended to make the mats around about 25 centimeters square for each square on your mat. It's about big enough for 2 tiny little feet to stand in. You want to make sure that they get this idea that going forward is just 1 square at a time, and so making it small is good for their balance and things too. So those mats, you can usually get quite a good sized grid marked out very cheaply. From there, you can have them put on their little BeeBot helmets, and you can pop down a couple of spots on the mat. So start at the star, and you want to get to the little treasure chest picture over there, and then give them some code cards. I've put them up on the website before. I will make sure that they're up there again this time. And using those little code cards, they can program, they can write a code from top to bottom, popping those cards down to get themselves from one place to another. I always recommend having kids sitting on every edge of the mat, not just at one side, because we want them to really be able to flexibly think about direction and that spatial awareness, being able to turn things around in your head to think about, you know, whether you'll need to turn first or walk first forward. That's really important for kids. So you could have quite a number of kids working on the mat at once. If, you know, you're on the orange star, you're on the blue star, you're on the yellow star, and you're all trying to get to the treasure chest in the middle. And getting them to really think about that. Which way are they going to start? Where will they be facing first? Which way will they be facing when they get to the treasure chest and those sorts of things? Often I do that in pairs. One kid's coding, one kid's being the BeeBot. Sometimes I say to the kids who are coding, oh, why don't you put an error in your code? So that the BeeBot person will need to troubleshoot that code before they get started. Because we all know that with coding, 90% of coding is just working out what went wrong. And we really want kids to be okay with having those challenges in front of them and for things not working, because if they're not going to be able to make it perfect every time, that's going to be really good for their resilience or grit, really good for their problem solving, because we know that in real life, we're often faced with challenges and we need to learn to have some dignity and pride in ourselves that we are able to solve those problems on our own. Especially if you're working in pairs, you've got a friend to help you and tell you if you've got it right or not. It can be a little bit challenging for some students in particular. So just see how you go with that. Might be a good activity to work into over a couple of weeks. So that's another way to get moving with code there. There's also another activity that I've done before where you tell the students where they're starting, but you don't tell them where they're finishing, and they need to be able to write a code that matches what you've got in your head or you've written on a piece of paper. So it's a bit like that shopping game. You know, I went to the shops and I bought bread. I went to the shops and I bought bread and a packet of Tim Tams. I went to the shops and I bought bread, a packet of Tim Tams, and a bottle of orange juice, but it's in reverse. So the first student will come up and say forward, and you'll say yes or no. And if it's yes, they get another turn to see if they can guess the next step as well. So they might say forward, forward, and you say no. So the next student comes up and they know that the first forward was right. So the next student might say forward, turn left, and you'll say yes. So they'll do that. And then they'll have another guess, forward again. You'll say yes. They'll say the next guess, forward again, nope. So then they're out and the next student comes up. And the next student will know that the first instruction was forward, the next instruction was turn left, the next instruction was go forward, and now they'll have their guess. Turn right, yes. And so on until the class as a whole has solved the code. It's a really good way to keep everybody engaged because they're listening to see where the instructions are leading. If they're not, when they get to their turn, they're not going to be able to solve the problem. So that's another way to get kids involved, probably not at the prep age, maybe more in year one and year two, and you can go on with that. Another one that's worked really, really well is having the kids write the code for brushing your teeth. So it involves a little bit of hilarity and looking a little silly. So I'll turn up with my toothbrush and my toothpaste and say, okay, kids, today we're going to write the code for brushing our teeth. What do I do first? And they'll say, put the toothpaste on the toothbrush. So you'll try, but of course the lid's on. So they need to go back and say, okay, first off, take off the lid of your toothpaste. Second off, squeeze the toothpaste onto the toothbrush. And that idea of sequencing and then writing down the codes that match that, that's a really good way and fun way. And of course they love it when, you know, you maybe put the toothpaste on the wrong end of the toothbrush, not on the bristles but on the handle, or, you know, it falls on you and you look ridiculous and have toothpaste everywhere. So, you know, those sorts of things are good. And you could do that for making a cup of tea or making a sandwich or whatever works with what you're doing in your room. Get those codes written down in sequence, write them on bits of card, stick them up on the wall or on a piece of paper and hold it up and show kids that this is the progression. These are instructions. This is the algorithm that we're running with. So those are things that you can do really cheaply, really easily in your room, or if you're a digital technology teacher, that you could run with in your half hour classes. The last thing that I always do with this age group are draw alongs. So kids are actually, you know, they're not great drawers at that age, but they really love drawing along, following those instructions to get really good at drawing something. So I'll start with drawing a personal computer, all the different parts of it. So the monitor, the keyboard, the mouse, the tower, and showing where the cables go. Just one bit at a time. Oh, we're going to draw the monitor now and show them it's a square and here's the stand and here's the screen on the inside and here's the on and off button, and getting them to draw along with you. For those kids who are ready, you can have that little bit of differentiation or extension by writing the word in as well, because some kids are ready for that and they love that. And using those terms, monitor, keyboard, mouse, tower, those sorts of things, and cables, it's really important for them to understand. I know some of you might be saying, well, we have Bluetooth mice and keyboards, and that's great. I always tend to draw the cables in anyway the first time we do it, because even though they're Bluetooth, they are still connected via Bluetooth. We just can't see that. And so starting with that abstract idea is sometimes too much for these little people. Start with the cables, then talk about how Bluetooth works. The other thing I also like to draw with them are some devices, digital devices that they might know, also some that they might not know. So I'm drawing a camera, and I usually try and show them how to draw it 3D. You'd be surprised at how good preps are at making it 3D if you show them how, and it makes them really proud of themselves. Drawing a camera and talking about the different ways a camera can be used, what can it be used for, taking photos, taking videos, drawing an iPhone. Oh, what can an iPhone be used for? It can be used to take photos, talk on the phone, and you know, you'll get lots of stories from kids about what their parents use their iPhones for. So be ready for that. Let that talk happen. That talk is all really good. And you can, if they're ready, extend that into the inputs and outputs idea. And if you've got year one, that's probably really important to talk about that an iPhone has more multi-uses. It has a lot of, it's multi-use because of the different inputs and outputs. That you've got a camera, you've got a microphone, you've got a touch screen on those, whereas on a camera you have more limited inputs and outputs. So really bear that in mind. Don't be scared to throw that little bit of terminology in. Those kids who are ready for it will pick it up. Those who aren't, it'll just go over their heads, and that's okay. Maybe next time you're talking, it'll come in. Don't bombard them with that terminology, but certainly drop it in here or there, because the more they hear it, the more they're going to internalize it. It's just going to make life easier for them going forward in the grades, because their assessment relies on them having that information very, very quickly in around year three, and actually even by the end of year two. So I do a lot of drawing, so we might draw a camera and talk about the uses. We might draw a MP3 player, which a lot of kids don't know what that is anymore. And so I usually take my iPod in and show them what it's for. An iPod, an iPad, an iPhone. They're very into the eyes. You can bring in some Android devices as well. So, you know, and have a look at those things. A TV, you know, a digital TV, and those will help your understanding in your classroom as well. All of those things are really simple. They're effective. They keep kids moving and busy and active. We don't want to be in the position where we're in a classroom teaching digital technology and it's that traditional chalk and talk. We really want them moving and talking with one another. Elbow partners, you know, talk to your elbow partner about a digital device you've used this week. Those sorts of things are really important too, and I love to let kids have that opportunity to talk to each other and share their expertise with one another, because this is somewhere where kids feel really confident, even those who have very limited literacy. Digital technology, I found, is just a real even playing field for these kids, and they really are so happy to have expertise to share with one another. So don't be scared, just jump in, get it done. Like I said, bit of song, story, bit of craft, getting that idea about visual programming language happening, getting them to think about different digital devices. I even in the prep year talk about a digital system being hardware and software working together, and that, you know, hardware is kind of like, if you were a robot, your hardware would be, you know, your head, your eyes, your ears, your nose, all of those sorts of things, whereas your software is the thinking that's happening inside your head, those thoughts and ideas and understanding, all of that process that's happening inside that we can't see, that's sort of like your software. Kids love and say your brain, and I'll say, well, no, your brain's squishy, you can touch that. Your software, all of those electrical impulses happening inside your head, and that's what's happening inside a computer as well. So that's where I generally tend to go in the first year or two. I hope that's helpful for some people out there. I'm sure there are lots of different ways to do it, and I by no means think I'm any sort of expert. I can just tell you what I've done and what I know and what's worked for me. If you've got ideas on what's worked for you and some things that you could do in your classroom or you have done and you'd like to share with us, I'd absolutely love to hear from you. Please contact me via the Facebook page, Mrs. Techie's Technology Classroom. I'm happy to take any suggestions, responses. I'd love to hear from other people who are in this field working with it, because obviously it takes up a lot of my thinking time at the moment, trying to make sure that I can make this time in these early years really just beneficial for everybody concerned. I really want to make sure that this time works for the kids. So thanks for listening this week. Like I said, I'm going to pop some things up on the Facebook page. I've been a little bit slack at that in the last week. First week of term, it's been pretty hectic. And I'll continue to just try to keep things happening for you there. Anyway, thank you very much.